Notice that politicians struggle to enact the things they run on, that regardless of who wins elections, lawmakers cannot pass whatever legislation they like. They find themselves bound. Oh, sorry. This is the Overton window at work. The idea coined by the Mackinac Center's Joe Overton describes the range of ideas that are politically acceptable at any time. And on the Overton Window podcast, we look at how ideas move from being unthinkable to plausible to policy and speak with the people who change what is possible in politics. Now, in a government run for the people's benefit, there ought to be no political incentive to tolerate waste, fraud, and abuse. This is something that ought to be outside of the Overton window. Yet it happens, and I'm going to talk with Heywood Talkove about it. Heywood is the CEO of LexisNexis Risk Solutions for Government and is a private consultant who helps governments root out mistakes and malfeasance in their operations. Heywood, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm really looking forward to this.
What should governments or what should people know about government programs not working the way they should?
What people should know, particularly those that pay taxes, is they should be outraged. And there's a bunch of different numbers out there. So you get to pick which one you believe. The first one is the GAO. It says that $521
billion Accountability Office, which reviews and rates government programs. A lot of auditors, a lot of people trying to answer questions like how much fraud is going on.
Yep. Yeah. So $521 billion lost. There's my number, which is a trillion, which is $115 million an hour. Or it could be used to pay down the debt. It could fund all of Medicare for all, or another great use case for that money would be helping those who need more benefits. And then the third number is Elon Musk, who's even more aggressive than me. He's saying it's $1.5 trillion. So no matter how you look at it, people that are paying taxes each and every week are losing a ton of money.
So the way that I look at it is there's some times where people get assistance that they're not eligible for just because they fill out the form wrong or they thought thought they apply that kind of thing. But when you offer a lot of assistance, whether it's in services or in direct payments, you're encouraging people to look at the system that was set up and say, how can I gain this for my own personal benefit?
Yeah.
How can you tell if a program's working the way that it should?
Well, I can say in general, none of the benefit programs are working like they should. And when I talk about those fraud rates, statistically, it's not possible for individuals to be stealing at this scale. These are organized, these are criminal, and they are highly sophisticated, taking advantage of government's antiquated systems and antiquated processes. And it doesn't matter the program, EBT, CMS with Medicare, Medicaid, TANF, all the programs have fundamentally the same flaw, which is limited front-end identity verification, no third-party audits, and then the other part of it is the investigations are usually done at the state or local level, but, you know, when you're dealing with transnational criminals, you need federal law enforcement to get in there because they're all connected. Right? What's happening in California is also happening in Texas and in Florida. It's the same groups stealing from the same programs at scale. It's fraud as a service.
Are international criminal organizations scamming state benefit systems? Can you give me an example?
Every single day it's happening, right? And like, I mean, we can talk about, for example, during the pandemic, during some testimony in front of the Oversight Committee with Chair Comer, the Secret Service acknowledged that APT 41 was deeply engaged in the stealing of benefits for the unemployment insurance program. We're seeing reports.
What is APT 41?
Advanced Persistent Threat 41, it's a state-sponsored Chinese cyber terror group. Very sophisticated. The same one that picked into the OPM files years ago. You know, you're also seeing, for example, what you saw in California with the hospices and the connection to overseas groups. What you're seeing in Minnesota and the connections to overseas groups. $700 million in cash exited the Minneapolis airport and went overseas. Now, I don't know about you, James, but in my wallet, if I got like $5, I'm lucky. Who walks around with millions of dollars in cash? Criminals.
So I guess the question is, what are you doing about it?
So I have been on this mission. This all started with Hurricane Katrina back in 2006, where we were watching at Lexus, people getting these $500 Visa gift cards that didn't even live in New Orleans, didn't live in Texas, didn't even live in the United States. They were just showing up and they were going from place to place to place, stealing these gift cards at scale. And that resulted in us writing this book back in 2015, WTF, Where's the Fraud? A New York Times bestseller, I might add, where we talked about how government programs, as they move from people getting benefits in person to going online, we're going to be increasingly susceptible to these criminal groups and fraudsters. That it wasn't the individual that filled out a form incorrectly. And as a side note, we should talk about the forms. It was more organized in nature. And then what we saw during the pandemic was an absolute explosion of these groups, whether it was the PPP loans from the SBA or the unemployment insurance loans. Criminals came in at scale and depleted the United States Treasury of almost $1 trillion. $1 trillion that could have been used for good. Now, what have we been trying to do? We have been evangelizing. You need to do a couple of simple things. First thing, front-end identity protection, that which is used every single day in the private sector. Right?
What is that like?
It's you go in and it confirms, are you who you say you are? Right. And by the way, not the quiz stuff, like what high school did you go to? What's your favorite pet?
I have noticed that the internet has stopped asking me for my mother's maiden name these days.
And the reason is, by the way, and this is a fact, and it's hard to digest, all of your data has been stolen. Your name, your date of birth, your social, it's been stolen probably 10 times over. The only question is, has it been used? And the first thing you can do to protect yourself is use a sophisticated front-end identity verification tool, like stuff that banks use, insurance companies use, Amazon, the big retailers. Without that front-end tool, you are going to be in a situation where you're going to lose significant amounts of money to criminals. The second thing that you
have... if you're not confirming identities, a person can make up 25 different ones, apply for the same thing. And if you're not making sure that these aren't 25 different people, then allows for fraud at a broader scale,
Yeah. And then the second part of it is states need to share data. The criminals use the same identity in every state. Over and over and over again. It's maddening to watch, right? So, I mean, how many times can you use Haywood Talco's identity to file taxes, to get food stamps, TANF, Medicaid, what have you, right? You can use it 50 times because the states don't share data. And then the third thing is the states and local governments and feds, self-attestation. my favorite word of the day. What that means is I'll take your word that what you put down in that form is accurate. No one checks. So one of the biggest scams you see right now, particularly in the Medicaid market, is these fake LLCs that then become fake durable equipment manufacturers or producers. So the way the criminals
work, these aren't companies who are trying, or these aren't people who are trying to collect Medicaid that they're to collect or be eligible for Medicaid, but rather to be eligible for Medicaid payments and charge the
system. No, these are businesses that sell into the Medicaid population. So you need an orthopedic, or you're a diabetic and you need a medication, or you need a wheelchair, right? Well, so they create a fake company. Now they do that, and I keep on telling people this. So hopefully one day, one Secretary of State will listen to me. You can go to any state Secretary of State webpage, put your name, put a name of a company in, put your name in. And as long as that name doesn't conflate with a name that has already been copyrighted, you now have an LLC. It's that easy. Once you have the LLC, you go on to the HHS website and you get a provider number. They're all there. They're all public. And then what you do is you try to sign up Medicaid patients, or you steal from the dark web a list of Medicaid patients and you start billing them for things that they don't ever get. And all of a sudden, you know, you're pocketing tens of millions of dollars. So like the idea of front-end identity verification, data sharing, self-attestation. If you do those three things, you go from like a trillion down to a couple hundred billion, still a huge number, but in the context of a $7 trillion spend, incredibly manageable.
Let's talk about the forms. When I've checked to see like the eligibility rules of assistance programs, you know, on government health and human services websites, like I can rarely ever tell whether a person would be eligible or what the eligibility rules are. Is that a feature designed to make it harder for fraudsters to figure out how to defraud assistance programs?
No, I think it's just the opposite. The criminals are so good at filling out the forms. Like, for example, they know when they're filling out an EBT form in most states, if they click that they're in transitional housing, nothing else matters, right? The problem with the forms is, for example, I have an 84-year-old mother. She can't understand them. It's not possible. She recently had a situation with the Social Security Administration with this thing called IRMA. It was a letter that was sent to her, 8-point font, 16 pages, trying to explain it. And it was a very simple, not even a mistake. It was just an issue of an equity got sold the prior year, and it looked like her income exploded. It wasn't the case. It was just moving assets around. It took me and an accountant like 2 weeks to fill out that form. And then it took the government 9 months to get back to her, and she's still waiting for her money from the Social Security Administration. The forms are too complicated. The forms ask for information that can be collected from other sources that the state has access to.
As in, they're the government. They know where you live.
they should have all of that. And what we end up doing is torturing the individuals in need, right? By making them, you know, get copies of bank accounts, making them provide documentation on address and living situations. The parallel I run into is I can click one button on Amazon and I can have something at my house in 2 hours. Why are we doing it? One of the things that I recently testified in front of the Senate that I had done is I went onto a bunch of state web pages, and I won't say the state, but this one particular state, which has a really high error rate for SNAP EBT, I pretended I was going to fill out the form. The form had 6 links that were broken. It wasn't optimized for a cell phone. It only worked on a PC. And then I had to call because I couldn't get past the broken links. I gave up after 3 hours sitting on that line, right? Those in need deserve better. Taxpayers deserve better. And there's a legislative and policy fix to making this all stop.
And it seems like that policy fix should be very popular.
You would think that people should be in favor of stopping fraud, but in some instances, they view fraud prevention as benefit prevention.
So I guess let me take a step back on the popularity of these things. We have assistance programs because it is popular to have programs that help people who need help. The question is, who are the people who need help? That's why the lawmakers establish eligibility rules to say, these people do, not these people. And now you just have to administer a system that says, okay, can we validate that you're one of these people who meet our eligibility rules or not? So that seems like it's a popular service. It seems like it should be incredibly unpopular to give to run a system that poorly administers those eligibility rules, where people who defraud the state or rely or that the people who are not eligible don't get benefits is the basic thing. Now, I think that's incredibly popular among normal people. We should have, if we're having a system that's supposed to help people who need help, that we help the people who need help and don't help the people who don't need help. But it's a weird thing because there's certain partisan ideologues who will argue that, no, there's no fraud. If there is, the biggest problem is that we have eligibility rules in the first place. There would be no fraud if everyone just if everyone was eligible. And then the other end of things, which is, it's all fraud. These systems only exist to be scammed.
Yeah.
And so it's like even any eligibility rules is improper, I guess. So where are we then?
All right. So here's a couple of truths. And I've used this with high-level appointed officials and a lot of elected officials. The people that I'm talking about that are stealing at scale, they're not your constituents. They don't even live in this country. They live overseas. What they've done is they've stolen your identity and they've taken advantage of your antiquated systems and technology. So we're not denying anyone benefits because they're not real. They're ghosts. The second thing is they talk about, well, fraud is only 0.1%. And where that comes from is that's the conviction rate. Well, when you're a state,
as in, if you're asserting that some of these people are defrauding the government, they only convict 0.1% of the people that they allege.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Well, when you have a fraud detection unit in a state that spends tens of billions of dollars and it has 6 people in it, you're not going to find anything. Right. And so the fraud rate is actually closer to 20%. The conviction rate is 0.1%. And you saw that play out during the pandemic. The UI program spent approximately $980 billion of taxpayer dollars. And the estimated fraud rates range from a low of $130 billion to a high of $400 billion. My number was $250. Year to date, time to date, approximately $4 billion has been recovered, right? Pay and chase doesn't work. If you don't put these things in place, what happens is eligibility determination is actually compassionate because it allows these programs to sustain over long periods of time. If you're watching what happened in Minnesota and you just look at the arc that went into that autism fraud, that's how it always goes. Somebody legitimately starts using it, other people figure it out, and then before you know it, what was going to cost $2 million is burning through $400 million of taxpayer funds.
I think you made an interesting political point that the people who are defrauding systems are not your constituents. I think it's also interesting that, like, your constituents who need these services tend not to be happy with the eligibility process.
Yes.
Gosh, it seems like having a fraud preventative eligibility process that works for its intended recipients would be a great way to score some political points with your constituents.
One of the things that I, you know, when I'm testifying on the Hill or I'm speaking to governors is I always ask this question. Have you ever tried to apply for one of your benefits? Not a single one has. And at that time, we go into the system and, like, I haven't seen a single elected official shake their head, right? And remember, I mean, in government, it's got some unique challenges, right? You can't pick and choose who your customers are. Banks can, insurance companies can, but you got to deal with individuals that are very tech savvy. And then you got my 84-year-old mother who still uses a flip phone and has a hard time because she can't get text messages, right? And can't get codes. She deserves the same level of service as others. So it just creates this very difficult environment to operate in. And it gets more complicated by the information that gets sent back to individuals. Like, I put the Irma form through one of the chat tools, and it was written at a 16th grade. It's a college-educated equivalent. That was the comprehension level you needed to understand it. Come on, right? It's not that hard. Somebody could have made it easier. It's not fair. It's not fair to those in need. Like I said, the elected officials, for the most part, in these benefit programs are defending ghosts. They don't even live in their state. They don't live in this country. It's stolen identities.
Your business is to help these governments solve these problems, right?
We try every single day to make a difference in that area, yes.
Can you give me an example of a program whose process you improved?
You know, I can't talk specifically about customers, but I can talk about one state that, and that some of this is fairly public, but I don't want to do it without their permission.
And I,
90% of the applications during the pandemic were fraud, and they put in front end identity verification, which I think we do a great job at. However, there's plenty of companies that do it, and their fraud rate went down to 3%. Right? It was that easy. Right? They were blowing up the call center. They were blowing up the back office. And they were using very sophisticated VPN tools to obfuscate where they were coming from. And once you had that information, you could easily fix it. That's why I don't understand why people don't do more. Right now, I've been on this crusade with the EBT program, SNAP benefits. The EBT card is essential.
Sorry, I should have elaborated on this before. SNAP benefits, those are, you get a card to pay for your food or other eligible products. I think it gets refilled once a month if you keep your eligibility. And so this is a card that you can use to, that's supposed to be used to help ensure that poor people in this country don't go hungry.
Yeah, a great program. $100 billion a year of taxpayer funds. And they secure it with what I call a glorified hotel room key. it doesn't have a chip on it. In fact, I was just reading a story in the Boston Herald this morning where the state of Massachusetts decided not to put the chip on the card, despite being the fifth highest fraud state in EBT SNAP in the country, because they didn't want to spend $15 million. That's what it would cost to make the cards chips, right? Like, I don't get it. Why would you let criminals steal? Why would you let our most vulnerable use a glorified hotel room key, have their benefits stolen, and not do anything to help them? I find that disturbing.
Why does a chip card help prevent fraud?
Yeah, so one of the criminal, part of the criminal playbook right now are skimmers. So they're putting skimmers on EBT terminals. And what they'll do when you swipe your non-chip glorified hotel room key card is they'll steal the number and they'll steal the password. And then they'll use that information and create their own. And then they'll go to one of the big wholesale clubs and buy a bunch of food. Or they'll sell those cards on the street for pennies on the dollar. So the skimmers have become a real problem. In fact, there was an operation that I got to participate in, and you can look it up, or your listeners can look it up. It was Operation April Fools, and it was done by the United States Secret Service. And that was one of the largest skimming operations, I think, ever discovered on the West Coast in California.
And so that is pulling people. So someone legitimately gets an EBT card. They legitimately purchased stuff for it, but that information that ties that to the account is stolen by someone else, who then buys whatever they want to resell on the market, or however that those schemes work.
Yeah. They go maybe to a large supermarket or a food warehouse store, buy things for their restaurant, buy things themselves, or they just sell the cards for pennies on the dollar. Meanwhile, you know, the next time the individual that's food insecure goes to the grocery store, fills up his or her cart, there's no money in the cart. And then they got to go through a process that can take 2 to 3 months to get that money back. What are they supposed to do in the meantime, James? Starve? Right? Like, I guarantee you, in your wallet right now, every one of your credit cards, every one of your debit cards has that chip on it.
With the exception of like the arcade Family Fun Center kind of cards. Yes.
Yes. Yes. That you are completely right about that. Yes.
So I guess I want to come back to the politics, because this is a situation where I think there's immense political will that, like, it should be popular, and I think it is in fact popular to ensure that our assistance programs go to the people who need them and not to people who are trying to scam the system. And you've kind of made a case that I think is correct, that this is a real problem and there are real solutions to the problem. Your solutions sound really easy. Can't be that easy, can it? Like, they would have done this already.
It's the same thing that the private sector does every day to protect their assets. It's so easy and it's so inexpensive. And that's what makes it so frustrating, right? We're in a situation right now, if I read correctly, the debt is up to $39 trillion. It's growing $2 trillion every single year. Debt service now costs more than the defense budget. It's simply unsustainable. And what I've been arguing is, if you could get that fraud rate down to 5%, then you wouldn't have to make cuts to Social Security. You might be able to do Medicare for all, right? There are things that you could do that wouldn't harm anybody. In fact, the only ones that would be harmed if you did that are the organized criminal groups, 70% of which are located overseas, using this money for horrible things, terrorism, child trafficking, things that disrupt our democracy. You would be cutting off their oxygen supply by putting controls in place around these benefit programs.
Is it easier or harder to get away with malfeasance these days?
It's so easy. I mean, I could be retired on my own island, knowing what I know right now on how to pick through these programs, right? The challenge is that elected officials at times don't understand it's taxpayer money, right? And sometimes what happens is you focus on use cases that aren't actually scalable. It's an individual issue. And my hope would be that both Democrats, Republicans, independents could rally around it. And I think the easiest way to rally around it is to go online and pretend you're needing a benefit and ask yourself, is that how you want your constituents treated? Ask yourself, you know, when you're losing, pick the number, $521 billion, $1.5 trillion, a trillion. Is that right for the people that work hard every single day to give money to that treasury to provide services? And I think if you start doing that, everyone should be outraged. Those in need should be outraged because, quite frankly, they should be getting more. Those that pay a lot in taxes should be outraged because their money isn't being used efficiently. And I feel like we're at a moment right now where, you know, fraud is a big deal and it's getting a lot of attention. But the question is, will we do something this time, or will this moment pass like it has passed on virtually every other time that it's been a hot topic?
Heywood, good luck on your attempts to shift the Overton window.
I appreciate that, and appreciate the opportunity to get this off my chest. And if you ever need anything, feel free to reach out. If anyone wants to follow me, I got some great content on X, and it's, Heywood Talkove on X, and you can follow me, and I put out some, I think, pretty interesting content. Thanks. Have a great day, sir.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Overton Window, a podcast from the Mackinac Center. Please subscribe and rate. For more, check us out at www.mackinaw.org. That's Mackinac with a C, like the island.